We wish to thank the makers of Alka-Seltzer, sponsors of the National Barn Dance, for relinquishing their time to enable us to bring you the following program. The program you are about to hear is under the auspices of the Democratic State Committee of New Jersey.
Welcoming cheers of 23,000 Ohio Democratic Party supporters. This address will bring to a close a long day for the chief executive. Early this morning, he made a speech to several thousand persons in Rochester, New York, who gathered around the rear platform of his special train and in the rain. Five other speeches followed as he proceeded through Batavia, Buffalo, along the lake to Erie, Pennsylvania, and now to Ohio's largest city. Flags, bunting, and campaign signs, banners, and posters add greatly to the color of this occasion, the last large rally at which the president will speak before Election Day next Tuesday. The Honorable Ray T. Miller, former mayor of Cleveland and now chairman of the Democratic Executive Committee of Cuyahoga County, will present the chief executive to this gathering and to the nationwide NBC radio audience. In just a moment, we will present Mr. Miller. At the moment, they're trying to get the crowd seated here, trying to quiet them a little bit. But that just doesn't seem to be possible. Police are trying wildly to clear the aisles behind the president and get everyone seated so that everyone may see. Here is the introduction, Mr. Miller.
President of the United States!
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, in making this my final national address of this campaign, I express once more my very deep regret that I could not carry out my wish to go to other states in the great Middle West, in the South, and across the Mississippi River. It has been solely in the interest of peace. It has been solely in the maintenance of peace that your great Secretary of State and I have felt that we should both remain within easy distance of the national capital in these trying days. Tonight, in Cleveland, I am happy through this great audience of my old friends to give this message to America. For the past 7 years, I have had the high honor and the grave responsibility of leadership of the American people. In those 7 years, the American people have marched forward out of a wilderness of depression and despair. They have marched forward right up to the very threshold of the future, a future which holds the fulfillment of our hopes for real freedom, real prosperity, real peace. I want that march to continue for 4 more years. And for that purpose, I am asking your vote of confidence. Now, we know that there are certain forces within our own national community composed of men who call themselves American, but who would destroy America. They are the forces of dictatorship in our land. On the one hand, communism, and on the other hand, the girdlers. It is their constant purpose, in this as in other lands, to weaken democracy, to destroy the free man's faith in his own cause. In this election, all the representatives of those forces, without exception, are voting against the New Deal. Yes, you and I are proud of that opposition. Because it is proof positive that what we have built, what we have strengthened in the past 7 years, is democracy. This generation of Americans is living in a tremendous moment of history. The surge of events abroad has made some few doubters among us ask, is this the end of a story that has been told? Is the book of democracy now to be closed and placed away on the dusty shelves of time? You're right. The answer is no. And my answer also is this. All we have known of the glories of democracy, its freedom, its efficiency as a mode of living, its ability to meet the aspirations of the common man, all of these are merely an introduction to the greater story of a more glorious future. And we Americans today, all of us, we are characters in this living book of democracy. But we are also its author. It falls upon us now to say whether the chapters that are to come will tell a story of retreat or a story of continued advance. And so, with you again, I believe that the American people will say, go forward. We look at the old world of Europe today. It is an ugly world, poisoned by hatred and greed and fear. We can see what has been the inevitable consequence of that poison. It has been war. And we look at the country in which we live. It is a great country, built by generations of peaceable, friendly men and women who had in their hearts faith, faith that the good life can be attained by those who will work for it. We know that we are determined to defend our country and with our neighbors to defend this hemisphere. We are strong in our defense, and every hour and every day we grow stronger. Our foreign policy is shaped to express the determination of our government and the will of our people in our dealings with other nations. Those dealings in the past few years have been more difficult, more complex than ever before. But there is nothing secret about our foreign policy. It is not a secret from the American people, and it is not a secret from any government anywhere in the world. I have stated it many times before, not only in words, but in action. Let me restate it like this. The first purpose of our foreign policy is to keep our country out of war. And at the same time, with that, we seek to keep foreign conceptions of government out of the United States. That is why we make ourselves strong. That is why we muster all the reserves of our national strength. And the second purpose of this policy is to keep war as far away as possible from the shores of the entire Western Hemisphere. Our policy is to promote such friendly relations with the Latin American republics and with Canada that the great powers of Europe and of Asia will know that they cannot divide the peoples of this hemisphere one from another. And if you go from the North Pole to the South Pole, you will know that that is a policy of practical success. Finally, our policy is to give all possible material aid to the nations that still resist aggression across the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean. And we make it abundantly clear that we intend to commit none of the fatal errors of appeasement. We have the thought that in this nation of many states, we have found the way by which men of many racial origins may live together in peace. If the human race as a whole is to survive, the world must find the way by which men and nations can live together in peace. We cannot accept the doctrine that war must be forever a part of man's destiny. We do know what would be the foreign policy of those who are doubters about our democracy. We do not know what would be the foreign policy of those who are obviously trying to sit on both sides of the fence at the same time. Ours is the foreign policy of an administration which has undying faith in the strength of our democracy today, full confidence in the vitality of our democracy in the future, and a consistent record in the cause of peace. No, our strength is measured not only in terms of the might of our armaments. It is measured not only in terms of the horsepower of our machines. The true measure of our strength lies deeply embedded in the social and economic justice of the system in which we live. For you can build ships and tanks and planes and guns galore, but they will not be enough. You must place behind them an invincible faith, faith in the institutions which they have been built to defend. The dictators have devised a new system, or rather, a modern, streamlined version of a very ancient system. But Americans will have none of that. They will never submit to domination or influence by Nazism or communism. They will hesitate to support those of whom they are not absolutely sure. For Americans are determined to retain for themselves the right of free speech, free religion, free assembly, and the right which lies at the basis of all of them, the right to choose the officers of their own government in free elections. We intend to keep our freedom, to defend it from attacks from without and against corruption from within. We shall defend it against the forces of dictatorship, whatever disguises and false faces they may wear. But we have learned that freedom in itself is not enough. Freedom of speech is of no use if a man has nothing to say. And freedom of worship is of no use to a man who has lost his God. So democracy, to be dynamic, must provide for its citizens opportunity as well as freedom. We of this generation have seen a rebirth of dynamic democracy in America in these past few years. The American people have faced with courage the most severe problems of all of our modern history. The start towards a solution of these problems had to be made 7 years ago by providing the bare necessities of life, food and shelter and clothing. And the American people insisted that those obligations were a concern of government. They denied that the only solution was the poorhouse. You your government assumed its proper functions as the working representative of the average men and women of America. And the reforms in our social structure that we have achieved, these permanent reforms are your achievement. Yes, the New Deal has been the creation of you, the American people. You provided work for free men, for free women in America who could find no work. Idle men were given the opportunity on roads to be built, homes to be erected, rivers to be harnessed, power to be made for farm and home and industry. You used the powers of government to stop the depletion of the topsoil of America, to stop decline in farm prices, to stop foreclosures of homes and farms. You wrote into the law the right of working men and women to bargain collectively, and you set up the machinery. Yes, and you set up the machinery to enforce that right. You turned to the problems of youth and age. You took your children out of the factory and shop and outlawed the right of anyone to exploit the labor of those children. And you gave to those children the chance to prepare in body and spirit the molding of an even fuller and brighter day for themselves. For the youth of the land, you provided chances for jobs and for education. And for old age itself, you provided security and rest. You made safe the banks which held your savings. You stopped, once and for all, gambling with other people's money, money changing in the temple. Yes. You advanced to these and to many other obligations, many obligations of democracy and therefore objectives of democracy. You gained them, you consolidated them, and you are advancing again. The task which this generation had to do has been begun. The forward march of democracy is underway, and its advance must not and will not stop. During those years while our democracy moved forward, your government has worked with you and for you. Your government has at times been checked, but always with the aid and the counsel of all of the people, we have resumed our march. And now, we are asked to stop in our tracks. We're asked to turn about, to march back into the wilderness from which we came. Of course we will not turn back. We will not turn back because we are the inheritors of a tradition of pioneering, exploring, experimenting, and adventuring. We will not be scared into retreating by threats from the doubters of democracy. neither will we be bribed. Bribed by extravagant promises of fabulous wealth. Those who offer such promise try to delude us with a mirage on the far horizon, a mirage of an island of dreams with palaces and palms and plums. And it's a curious fact of a nature that a mirage is always upside down above the horizon. And then on top of that, the mirage upside down or right side up isn't there at all. Now you see it, and now you don't. Of course, we shall continue to strengthen all of these dynamic reforms in our social and economic life to keep the processes of democracy side by side with the necessities and with the possibilities of modern industrial production. Of course, we shall continue to make available the good things of life created by the genius of science and technology, to use them, however, not for the enjoyment of the few, but for the welfare of all. For there lies the road to democracy that is strong. Of course, we intend to preserve and build up the land of this country, its soil, its forests, and its rivers, all of the resources with which God has endowed the people of the United States. Of course, we intend to continue to build up the bodies and the minds of the men, women, and children of the nation through democratic education and a democratic program for health. For there too lies the road to democracy that is strong. Of course, we intend to continue our efforts to protect our system of private enterprise and private property, but to protect it from monopoly of financial control on the one hand and from communistic wrecking on the other. Of course, we shall continue our efforts to prevent economic dictatorship as well as political dictatorship. Of course, we intend to continue to build up the morale of this country, not as blind obedience to some leader, but as the expression of confidence in the deeply ethical principles upon which this nation and its democracy were founded. For there lies, once more, the road to democracy that is strong. The progress of our country, as well as the defense of our country, requires national unity. We need the cooperation of every single American, our workers, the great organizers and technicians in our factories, our farmers, our professional men and women, our workers in industry, our mothers, our fathers, our youth, all the men. women who love America just a little bit more than they love themselves. And if we can have the assistance of all these, we can promise that such a program can make this country prosperous and free and strong, to be a light of the world and a comfort to all people. And all the forces of evil shall not prevail against it. For so it is written in the book, and so it is written in the moral law, and so it is written in the promise of a great era of world peace. This nation, which is arming itself for defense, has also the intelligence to save its human resources by giving them that confidence which comes from useful work. This nation, which is creating a great armament, has also found the strength to build houses and begin to clear the slums of its cities and its countrysides. Yes, this nation has become the industrial leader of the world, has become that with the humanity to know that the people of a free land need not suffer the disease of poverty and the dread of not being wanted. So, I think that it is the destiny of this American generation to point the road to the future for all the world to see. It is our prayer that all lovers of freedom may join us, the anguished common people of this earth, for whom we seek to light the path. I see an America where factory workers are not discarded after they reach their prime, where there is no endless chain of poverty from generation to generation, where impoverished farmers and farmhands do not become homeless wanderers, where monopoly does not make youth a beggar for a job. I see an America whose rivers and valleys and lakes, hills and streams and plains, the mountains over our land and nature's wealth deep under the earth are protected as the rightful heritage of all the people. I see an America where small business really has a chance to flourish and grow. I see an America of great cultural and educational opportunity for all its people. I see an America where the income from the land shall be implemented and protected by a government determined to guarantee to those who grow it a fair share of the national income. An America where the wheels of trade and private industry continue to turn to make the goods for America, where no businessman can be stifled by the harsh hand of monopoly, and where the legitimate profits of legitimate business are the fair reward of every businessman. Every businessman, big and little, in all the nations, I see an America with peace in the ranks of labor. And America where the workers are really free. And through their great unions, undominated by any outside force or by any dictator within, can take their proper place at the council table with the owners and managers of business. Yes, an America where the dignity and the security of the working man and woman are guaranteed by their own strength and fortified by the safeguards of law. An America where those who have reached the evening of life shall live out their years in peace, in security, where pensions and insurance for these aged shall be given as a matter of right to those who through a long life of labor have served their families and their nation so well. I see an America devoted to our freedoms, unified by tolerance, unified by religious faith, a people concentrated, a people consecrated, consecrated to peace, a people confident in strength because their body and their spirit are secure and unafraid. During these years, while our democracy advanced on many fields of battle, I have had the great privilege of being your president. And I think that no personal ambition of any man could desire more than that. Yes, it is a hard task. It is a task from which there is no escape, day or night. And through it all, there have been two thoughts uppermost in my mind: to preserve peace in our land and to make the forces of democracy work for the benefit of the common people of America. Seven years ago, I started with loyal helpers and with the trust and faith and support of millions of ordinary Americans. The way was difficult. The path was dark. But I think we have moved steadily forward to the open fields, to the glowing light that shines ahead. The way of our lives seems clearer now if we but follow the charts and the guides of our democratic faith. There is a great storm raging now, a storm that makes things harder for the world. And that storm, which did not start in this land of ours, is the true reason that I would like to stick by those people of ours until we reach... Yes, stick by these people of ours until we reach the clear, sure footing ahead. And we will make it. Make it before the next term is over. We will make it, and the world, we hope, will make it too. When that term is over, there will be another president. And many more presidents in the years to come. And I think that in those years to come, that word president will be a word to cheer the hearts of common men and women everywhere. Our future belongs to us Americans. It is for us to design it, for us to build it. In that building of it, we shall prove that our faith is strong enough. Strong enough to survive the most fearsome storms that have ever swept over the earth. In the days, in the months, in the years to come, we shall be making history, hewing out a new shape for the future. And we shall make very sure that that future of ours bears the likeness of liberty. Always, the heart and the soul of our country will be the heart and the soul of the common man, the men and the women who never have ceased to believe in democracy, who never have ceased to love their families, their home, and their country. The spirit of the common man is the spirit of peace and goodwill. It is the spirit of God, and in his faith is the strength of all America.
From Cleveland, Ohio, the National Broadcasting Company has brought you the final major political address of the President of the United States in his campaign for re-election. More than 23,000 persons jammed Cleveland's huge public auditorium to hear and see the chief executive and to cheer him. And outside, there were perhaps 100,000 more who listened to him over a public address system installed for that purpose. The National Anthem. President of the United States has spoken from Cleveland. On Monday night, he will speak briefly over these facilities from his Hyde Park home, a final word to the nation on the eve of our national election. From Cleveland, the president will return to Washington. He'll be on his way in a few minutes. During the remaining portion of this hour, you are to hear a talk by Senator Bennett Champ Clark of Missouri. For his address, we take you now to Columbia, Missouri.
Speaking from...